This is GamesAtWork.biz with Michael Martin and Michael Rowe, your weekly podcast about gaming technology and play. The thoughts and opinions on this podcast are those of the hosts and guests alone and not the opinions of any organization which we have been, are, or may be affiliated with. This is episode 225. Aha! It's AI. Good morning, good evening, good afternoon. Michael Rowe here on a wonderful Friday afternoon with my friend and co-host Michael Martin. Welcome to GamesAtWork.biz.
Yay, we're here. It's awesome. And do we have some awesome things to share with you guys, gals, and associated, fantastic, wonderful, beautiful people. Let's get right to it. It'll be, we think, a little bit of a shorter episode today, but sometimes when we say that, it's not. We'll see. So let's start with an amazing story around AI and machine learning and intelligence. We've talked about Go before. We've talked about StarCraft II before. And there's a new article that's recently out talking about how StarCraft AI that's been supported by DeepMind is doing better and better. And in fact, in this case, unless you handicap it to be much more like a human, is outcompeting people much more strongly than the last time we talked about this.
Yes. we are definitely talking about that.
Well, it is, right? I mean, this is the thing. Gosh, I don't remember how many episodes ago it was, but the point was, for a complex game like StarCraft II, where there are so many variables at play and so many things that have to be taken into account, much more so than the incredibly complex capability but very simple gameplay for Go. This is a game that is that's used pretty frequently in esports, and I think we saw an esports league specifically devoted to StarCraft. And now AlphaStar has developed itself to a point where it can compete and win on a regular basis against professional game sports type players.
Yes. Now, what's really interesting about this to me is I spent some time actually watching the training sessions, right? Mm-hmm. And if you've ever watched someone who is just incredible at StarCraft, it's almost a Twitch game, right? Which mm-hmm. you wouldn't think about for a real-time strategy game. But your reaction time and your planning and your approach to the map and everything is, it's got to be really, really fast because it is that real-time strategy game. And I've always, when I play StarCraft, I always either spend too much time working on my tech tree, or too much time focused on building up my attack force to go wipe out the other guy, right?
Right.
And just watching how the AI learns to balance that, as well as how it learns to effectively manage the approach to see the map, right? Because you have mm-hmm. to believe, if they're actually playing it correctly, that there's no special capability by the AI to see the map. And so you see them sending drones to kind of discover the map. And it really was unbelievably interesting to watch it try to figure out what best to do and how best to attack. It was more educational, I think, to me than it probably was to the AI. And so I was really fascinated by the approach that the AI took in its learning. And I think that was probably the most interesting aspect of it for me.
Yeah, I mean, reading the article, and I'm not a StarCraft player, so I cannot appreciate the degree of difficulty and the complexities that are being dealt with here.
But didn't you play Age of Empires or one of those other games?
I've played a lot of those and the Civilization kind of stuff.
Yeah,
and, you know, so I get the general notion about how it is, and the tech tree concept is not foreign to me. I love all the Civ revs from Sid Meier's. That was good fun. So it's easy to spend a lot of your attention and points, however they're pointed in the game, to develop that tech tree and win on technology versus doing military wins. Or at least get to a point where you have overwhelming force because of the technology advances that you've made. What was intriguing here was how the DeepMind folks had dialed themselves directly into the gaming engine, mm-hmm. and the difference in outcomes based on whether you were on the gaming engine and getting the detail directly or not, and having to discover via the drones, like you said. Or the flip of this too was the article was talking about, what was it, actions per minute or something like that, or actions per second. That because an AI is, what did they say, not limited by fleshy hands and banks of buttons, can actually execute more commands per minute / second than a human equivalent would. So,
well, yeah, and that was the twitch that I was talking about, right?
Yeah.
You know, just watching them play from a pure twitch perspective was just phenomenal. Mm-hmm. It blew me away. It's something that I am not good at. It's probably one of the reasons I don't like first person shooters. I'm not a twitch player.
Right, right.
I like strategy games like Civilizations, where you actually spend the time to kind of look at the map, figure out every one of your moves, etc. And real time strategy games are not that in any stretch of the imagination. And so you end up in this unbelievably quick twitch play, trying to figure out, you know, what should I be doing here? If I spend 30 seconds on that, is that going to mess me up, for what I need to do over here? Because I've not spent the amount of time that I need to do what I need to build up the tech tree in order to have overwhelming force, et cetera. Right. So, the tech tree is really all about advancing the capabilities of your units, which is something that you see in Civilizations, no problem there, but not something in some of Civilizations, right? But it's not, you can't win a tech victory. You actually have to defeat the other person and win a
military victory.
Yeah, an overwhelming force.
Right.
So, but
you get there faster if you have better tech than the other, right?
Right. Yeah, right.
If you're right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So very, very, very cool. I enjoyed watching it learn, right? Like I said, to me, it was almost a lesson in learning how to play it better.
well, right. And it, as you're seeing that experience of machine learning, and from time to time, you get those aha moments where you are able to see, hey, that's how the machine was sorting out how to establish a better path to victory. That is kind of cool. I do wonder, though, from time to time, where the training experience of machine learning could potentially be either interfered with, or the human counterpart can be victorious by doing the very unexpected. But when I go down that route, I am always reminded that no, the whole point of artificial intelligence and gameplay is experiencing and exposing every option to learn from every option, a la the conversation we're having a few weeks ago around the various Easter eggs and such from Qbert and other games that, like, oh, look, here's a secret level no one's ever found. This Easter egg didn't exist, but the machine found it. And after, you know, years and years and years, that's where it is, right?
Yep, yep.
So speaking of Easter eggs and aha moments, our friend Epred Ian gave us a really pretty cool one that took both of us down memory lane, and that is a game here where the 1985 was it?
Yep.
Video from AHA was exposed inside of a gameplay in Just Cause 4. I've never played Just Cause 4, but this 49-second video is super cool. And when you watch the video afterwards from the band, you're like, I see it. That is super awesome.
Yeah, yeah. And I think Just Cause is one of Ian's favorite games right now. So it is pretty cool. And what's interesting, I don't know if you've had time to read all the various different comments and everything, but the way they did it was basically just turning off some of the skins and shaders, right, in the graphics engine. So it kind of shows you how something that when it first came out in 1985 was considered revolutionary, and now it's like, oh yeah, I can do that in a game. It's pretty easy. I just, you know, hit this button. So
yeah, the comments are actually pretty funny, where, you know, someone says, hey, remember this in Saints Row 2? I remember. And then some reply to that says, Pepperidge Farm remembers.
It's the member berries.
Yeah, so pretty fun. And just to help with the visual, and since we're an audio podcast here, the video for Take On Me is about a woman who is drawn into a two-dimensional grayscale comic world by a guy in the comic. Yeah. And so that's exactly how the gameplay works here in this first-person shooter, where all of a sudden, as Michael said, the renderings happen and make it look just like a pen and ink drawing, or pencil and pen type drawing experience in the 3D virtual reality world.
Yes.
Or first gameplay. Anyway, fun stuff. So thank you, Ian, for sharing that with us. Moving from the more virtual to the more solid, so to speak, we have some examples of some intriguing robotics. And this first one, Michael, reminded me a little bit of Google's foray with their balloons. This time it's Facebook and using aircraft. So let's talk about this.
Yeah, this is interesting, right? Because the whole idea is how do you bring internet access to areas where the infrastructure is not in place, even cellular's not in place. And so you do that with, you know, Project Loon, which was the balloons, or Facebook's trying to do it with these solar-powered planes, because they can stay up for a very, very long time and provide that gateway or that network connectivity. And the ability to be at 20 kilometers in altitude and cover a very, very large area for broadcast of internet signal is what's really interesting about this. And so when you think of providing connectivity and access to the internet to remote regions, I think this is a fantastic way of doing it. It's significantly less expensive than satellite. Satellite, you're talking tens to hundreds of millions to put the satellite in orbit, and latency on the messages of, you know, anywhere of around 2 seconds up and down. So when you're looking for real-time or near real-time systems, say whether that's Internet of Things or gaming or media streaming, that's a problem. So the closer you can get the broadcast / uplink signal to the user, but still keep it up covering a large area of ground cover, the more accessible you can bring internet capabilities to regions. So I think this is really, really cool. While they have been scaling back some of their ambitions with it, the ability to do this with internet connected drones is fascinating. I think this is really neat.
I like it too, and I need to spend a little time looking at this. It's the Airbus Zephyr drones.
Yep.
And these sort of drones, and because they are solar powered, I would imagine may have a very long time that they can spend in the air. It may be even unlimited, right? It says it's that it can fly for months. Yeah. So it would be really intriguing to understand what the launch structure is. You know, how do you launch one up into the air? Does it need something special? You know, does it use a rocket? Does it, is it like a big slingshot catapult sort of thing? And how it goes from there. The other intriguing thing for me is thinking about, okay, if this is a partnership between Airbus and Facebook in order to extend internet access, obviously there's an important value proposition here that Facebook, maybe in conjunction with others, would be the backbone for internet access in these remote areas, and the ability to monetize those data streams or provide value-added services on those data streams are another really intriguing way to think about access, and then who has access to the data that's passing over those connections too. So,
yeah, I mean, just like your ISP effectively has access to all your data, in this case, Facebook becomes that ISP, and they have access to all the data. So there's a major monetary benefit to Facebook if they can get people to use this service too.
Yes. So intriguing story, something to take a little bit more of a look-see about. So moving from one autonomous unit to another, a really intriguing article you found, Michael, from The Verge, dealing with these special bat utility belts. Well, they're not bat utility belts, but, you know, I'm feeling superpowers today. These utility belts that are used to help the humans who are working in Amazon factories avoid the interactions with the robots that are also in the factories that they don't want to have. What was your take on this?
Yeah, I thought this was really interesting. It's we tend to look at autonomous systems and how we can add all these great sensors and other capabilities to the system itself so that they truly can be autonomous. But in a warehouse setting, you already have safety harnesses and other things that workers must wear. And you already kind of know the layout. And so the two most random things moving around are the robots and the people. So why not let them talk to each other via sensors? And in this case, you basically have a belt that broadcasts a signal to the robot. So the robot says, humans have the right of way. I will let them go by, or I won't get in their way. Which, again, it's an interesting way to solve a problem that just makes sense. It's simple, it makes sense. And it's a good safety thing.
Yeah, I like this idea a lot. But one of the things that kind of springs to mind for me pretty quickly is, gosh, there ought to be a way to virtualize this vest and have this be, say, an app on your phone that might be able to broadcast either via Wi-Fi or Bluetooth or a similar sort of thing that would allow a person to, or basically phone to robot communication to establish that Gaijin circle around the human and avoid a robot carrying a huge pallet of stuff to not crush the human.
Well, think about
trying to do its thing.
We talked about other exoskeletons that workers could be wearing for lifting and other things. So you would just build it into there. To me, looking at this, this is probably, you know, a test harness, for lack of a better term, to see if the technology works. And then you worry about miniaturization. I mean, maybe you get it small enough that it's in their badge, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Right? Or in their helmet or
you know,
a bunch of different stuff like that. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah. So to me, this is a great way of getting it started and testing out the technology. And then you focus on getting it better, better, cheaper, faster, stronger.
And, you know, to the point of safety anyway, it is an important thing to have back braces, especially for people that are maybe moving things around in a warehouse. So it's also an intriguing and good way to take advantage of something you're wearing anyway.
Exactly.
To provide that benefit too.
Yeah, because, cool. I mean, the vest looks big and bulky, but I'm sure it's not the whole vest that's the sensor. I think it's just something added to it.
Right. So robots might be able to sense where the people are by radio signals emitting from a badge or a vest or something like that, but they might also be able to see them, one would hope, if they were equipped with appropriate cameras and capabilities. And you found this really intriguing Intel camera, RealSense is what they're calling it, that may be something that we'll see even more of coming forward. What struck you as most intriguing about this?
Well, you know, we've been looking at these types of cameras all the way back to, what was it, the PS3 or the PS4?
And Xbox Microsoft, as
right,
well.
Xbox that had these, you know, IR emitters and sensors to keep track of what's going on. What this is really doing is all about, you know, packaging it and getting it small enough and modular enough to be included in other systems a lot easier. So this is a camera / sensor that can both track location and mapping data in real time to provide a much more detailed spatial layout of the environment something is in. Think about if you're wearing an AR-VR hybrid headset and you want to know the person's position in the room. You don't have to add something additional because this would have the camera and the sensors in it in the headset. Think about our little previous example with the Amazon robot,
right,
knowing where it is in relationship to the person. And, you know, if the person is carrying something, right, like, you know, the old Three Stooges joke, the ladder joke,
yeah,
you know, they're only taking up 1 foot square, but they've got a 12-foot ladder over their shoulder.
Right. And so as they turn,
they're knocking over the robot's pallets, right? So understanding spatial awareness within an environment is what this type of stuff does longer term. And I find, you know, we're getting cheaper and cheaper, better packaging. So I think this will once again be used in more AR, VR, and robotic, just like the title says, use cases in industrial in corporate and potentially in games too.
Okay. Now this is making even more sense to me too, because the Amazon robot, for example, might have one of these,
yep,
which would then be transmittable to the human and their AR experience in the same factory. So they would know that there's a big pallet robot about to come around that blind corner, and perhaps the AR environment would warn them about moving quickly around that corner because they're going to get bumped into.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
So the system could take advantage of that spatial awareness. And gosh, at $199, if you don't have to have those other location chipsets and ones that maybe aren't as pinpoint accurate.
Yeah, well, instead of putting all these Bluetooth low energy beacons all around your factory floor, you enable the robots to have this and they get that same awareness.
Right.
I'm guessing. Right. I don't know the details on at that level, but I could see that being something that it would enable.
But and potentially then mesh network enabling this even further, because if you're using robots for, I don't know, inspection of gas or oil pipelines, you know, that might be a way then of extending the network even further, perhaps even with the drones that we were just talking about a moment ago from Facebook and from Airbus and what they're trying to do. Nifty.
You got it.
How about that? Look, this show is hanging together pretty well, isn't it?
It's almost like we planned it.
I guess it was just waiting to be discovered how they hang together. Well, the last thing that we have on deck for today is one that deals with Twitter. And I think the quick hit on this one is that there's now a mechanism of finding out who did a tweet originate with and then what happened from there. So I'm not sure I'm super excited about this yet, but perhaps the use case will be fun.
Yeah, this one, I had seen this and I made a little snarky comment in our Slack of meh, basically. And then I heard a deeper discussion on it on a Daily Tech News show the other night. And the way Twitter has enabled conversations, sometimes you have somebody in the string of a conversation who you follow, you see their tweet, and it's kind of out of context.
Right.
And then you see somebody respond to that tweet, and then you find out that the idea here is you would know that that's the person who set off the original conversation. So they might have a more appropriate response.
Go to the top.
Yep.
And, you know, to go figure out where did this come from and then scroll down. Yeah. I still find unrolling some of the tweets still a little bit problematic. Well,
yeah,
that's the time that we have for this week. So we'll wrap here and we'll look forward to connecting with all of you again next week when we're back once more for gamesatwork.biz.
Woo-hoo.
See ya.
Bye.
You've been listening to gamesatwork.biz, the podcast about gaming technology and play. We are part of the Blueberry Podcasting Network and would like to thank the band Random Encounters for their song, Big Blue. You can follow us on Twitter at gamesatwork_biz or at our website at gamesatwork.biz.